Sure.
Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio with your host, Jody Johnston Powell, licensed social worker, certified family life educator, second generation parent educator, and author of the award-winning book, The Parents Tool Shop, The Universal Blueprint for Building a Healthy Family. For over 25 years, Jody has been training parents and family service professionals nationwide and serving as a parenting expert to the media worldwide. Now, through the Parents Tool Talk radio show and teleseminar series, Jody shares her practical advice and introduces you to other experts who can give you proven, effective advice on the issues that matter most to parents. So get ready to be informed, entertained, and enlightened as we join Jody now.
Hello, and welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio. I'm so glad you've joined us today. I'm Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop and your host. And this is our third live open Q&A question and answer program where you can ask any question you like about parenting or parent education. And in addition to handling and answering the questions that you may be asking live via email, chat, or phone, and some questions I've received by email, I also have some questions that I'm frequently asked. And some of those that I pulled out just in case we have the time are kids asking for things during hard economic times when we need to cut back, out-of-control kids after visitation with an ex-spouse, and that's a very common problem, fears, whether it's monsters or going upstairs or downstairs by themselves, what's the right age to date, tattling, screaming, and I've even got some quickie questions and answers. If we're short on time, don't have time for a long answer, I've got a couple of quickies like potty mouth and back talk, lying, home alone, those kinds of things. So what I'd like to do is to start off by making an announcement. As we have mentioned in our other Q&A programs, we have decided to do three test shows using this format. This is the third. And now we would like to get your feedback to help us decide whether or not we should continue offering shows with this open Q&A format. We want to know if these programs have been of value to you, and whether or not you might be interested also, kind of twofold information we'd like from you, is also whether or not you might be interested in summer teleclasses. I'm not able to offer them very often, but this summer I would be able to, and so I'm trying to find out if some of our worldwide parent listeners and loyal supporters would be interested in doing some teleclasses. So my producer and I, we've created a brief five-question survey to make it easy for you to give us your feedback. Seriously, it'll only take 1 minute, three at the most, for you to fill that out. And if you are willing to take the time to give us your feedback, we do have a thank you gift that we'll give you at the end of completing that survey. If you would go to get the survey, it's at parentstooltalk.com/links. That's www.parents, with an S, tooltalk, T-A-L-K, .com/links, L-I-N-K-S. And before I dive into the questions that I've received in advance, let me tell you how you can ask questions during the live show. You can call in by dialing 1-347-205-9654 and pressing the 1 key on your telephone keypad to raise your hand. That number again is 1-347-205-9654. And if you're just, you can call in and just listen, but if you have a question, hit the 1 key on your phone keypad to raise your hand, and then we'll know that you got a question. Your other option is that you can go to the Parents Tool Talk chat room anytime during the live show, and my producer, Chris Gooley, will take your question and pass it on to me. Just go to www.parentstooltalk.com and click the play/chat button that's right underneath today's show title and description. And if I would like to be able to accommodate as many questions as possible, so if you do call in type in your chat question, if you could maybe keep the backstory on it and background information fairly brief, and if you could ask questions in a general way, so if possible, all of our listeners can benefit from the answer. What I like to do is to give a general answer and then to customize it for you and your specific family. And to do that, I might ask you a few questions But if you could just give me the brief question up front, I'll answer that generally, and then we can customize that specifically to your needs and your child and your values. So let's get started. I understand, Chris, that you've received a couple of questions in advance. Would you like to read the first of those?
Sure. No problem, Jody. We have a question here from email, and it says, "Hi, I have spent the last year and a half as a stay-at-home mom. I'm loving the time that I now have with my kids, but some days I feel like I'm spinning my tires trying to keep up with housework and engaging the kids. At the end of some days, when I reflect on what I've accomplished, I feel like it's a short list. This is probably more about time management than it is about parenting. However, I hope that you may have some tips to help me balance the time I spend with my kids, who are 6 years and 19 months." Here, let me go back and start of that sentence, actually. "I hope you may have some tips to help me balance the time I spend with the kids, cleaning the house, and maybe getting in some time for myself." Then she says in parentheses, "I'm a painter who hasn't painted in a long time." And she has extra O's on the word long. So it's been a long time. And then she says, "Thanks."
Well, thank you for the question. And if you are a painter, I certainly want to support that. My father is a professional artist, and one of my good friends and colleagues is an artist and mom. And I know often when we talk, we talk a lot about this, of how she can make time for herself and what's her passion. And balance really, whether even though those of us who aren't artists in your sense of the word, I think that balance is a real issue that almost every parent probably faces. It comes down to what our values are, our priorities, and trying to establish realistic expectations for all of those so that we're not spending too much time in one area and then neglecting another area and then either feeling incompetent, frustrated, or just not getting our needs met. So I think there's value in approaching parenting like a job in terms of using some of the skills that we use in jobs with time management and that type of thing. And I think we can accomplish a lot. But I think if we go too far down that road of only approaching it, you know, and looking at it in terms of what can I accomplish and what's on my to-do list and all of that, I think sometimes we can end up missing out on some unplanned opportunities for growth and experiences that really do come, you know, along without any expectations at all. So I think if we could look at each of your priorities, and maybe I can offer you a couple of suggestions. One of the first ones that you mentioned is housework. And first of all, I have always been a mom at home. I started a mom at home support group called the Family Network here in the Dayton area. And so this issue of spending time home with the kids but still, you know, wanting to keep everything balanced, and for me it was not giving up my career goals and how I could do that. For me, that's always been an issue. So this is something for, you know, about 30 years now. Now I'm an empty nester. I can really relate to. So first of all, let's take a look at housework. I think I haven't seen your house, so I don't really know what your house cleaning standards are. If you are concerned or are always trying to keep it immaculate, then with a 6-year-old and a 19-month-old, there's a real good chance that you're never really going to reach that goal, or you may reach it and it'll stay that way for 20 minutes. So I think taking a look at what your standards are for that and how much time you're spending each day on it is something that you'd want to take a look at. I think if you can just set realistic expectations without them being unrealistic, such as everything's always going to look like a hotel all the time, like you're ready to show your house, but that it's reasonably picked up and it's clean enough that, you know, the kids can be playing on the floor. It's not dirty in terms of not being healthy. And then once a week, you know, involve everybody once a day in basic tasks. Your 6-year-old is old enough to start learning things like picking up her own toys and putting her own dishes in the dishwasher and helping out with some of those things. Your 19-month-old can actually help you, or if you're married, your husband, her dad. And then what I would suggest is once a week do that deeper cleaning and do it as a family. You know, just dive in, whether it's, you know, Saturday or Sunday afternoon, everybody dive in, get the deep cleaning done so that all you really have to do on a day-to-day basis is some of that basic cleanup and just keeping things a little bit tidy. So that can help a little bit with not always spending so much time on the housework. In terms of, what's the next one, engaging the children, I don't know that it's really your job to entertain children or to feel that you have to always be keeping them engaged. And I don't know that you are. You wrote this in, so I'm not going to make any assumptions on that. But I have seen that often with parents. And on the one time, you definitely want to spend time each day together. You know, that's the whole beauty of being a mom at home, is being able to have that time with your kids. But you also want to be teaching them how to play by themselves, how to engage themselves. What I did with my daughter, and this was when the older one was off to school and she was younger, but I would think you could do it maybe with your 19-month-old and even with your 6-year-old, is to make a list of things that they can do by themselves. Your 1.5-year-old isn't going to be coming up with the ideas as much as you would, but you want to think about things that your children can do when you're there, when you're off doing something else. And I don't necessarily mean off away where you're not supervising, but just you're doing an activity. What's something that they could do while you're doing an activity? And it could even be in the same room. And with regards to that, your time for yourself, in your case, you know, time to be able to do artwork really is an important priority. If that's your passion and that's your outlet, and that for you actually may be one of your stress management techniques because it's a way of expressing yourself, I would really encourage you to do that and to make it a priority. If there's a way that, if you are married, if your spouse can take the kids for an hour a day or maybe a half a day on Saturday, just some time where you get some alone time, and whether it's taking a hot bath or doing some artwork, that's one option. Another option is to do it together with your kids. Start with just maybe 15, 20 minutes of, this is our creative time, or this is our quiet time. And they may be in the same room. Again, I don't know what your setup is. It could be that your 6-year-old colors at one table, and your 19-month-old is within eye range, within, you know, arm reach possibly, and you can maybe do some artwork at the same time. It could be writing, drawing, doing crafts, and so maybe planning some things ahead, or again coming up with a list of some things that they could do. That would be something else. Now, your 19-month-old, I don't know, you know, 19-month-olds can really vary. I don't know what his or her abilities are, or energy level, or if, you know, this is a child who can't possibly sit still, not even for 5 minutes, or you constantly have to keep an eye on him. If the child can do quiet activities, then this idea may work. If not, and if your spouse can't maybe take your kids and give you some quiet time, another option is if your 19-month-old is napping, don't clean, do your art. Because you can do that cleaning at other times as a family or when the kids are up and involving them. But I would, you know, when babies are little, we say when the baby sleeps, you sleep. But at this point, if you don't need a nap, and what would really float your boat is to paint a boat or a seascape or some other kind of art, then take that time to do that for yourself, and that may go a long way. So I hope that's helpful. Were there other questions, Chris, that we got in advance?
Yes, we did have another question from email, and this is, hello, my 4-year-old son is starting soccer soon. This is his first sport. He has been so excited, but now that it's getting close, he's getting nervous and says he does not want to go. I want to encourage him because I think he will like it when he tries it. How do I encourage him without pushing him?
Oh, that's a really good question, because if we do start to push, then we can end up into a power struggle, and then it's almost like, you know, why am I doing this? This was your idea, and you know, don't do it for me, do it for you. You know, what I think I would do is to acknowledge the child's excitement and help, especially with being 4. Kids don't really understand emotions much. I think I would just acknowledge for him that excitement can really feel a lot like fear. And if you think about it, when you're excited about something or if you're fearful of something, there's a lot of those feelings that are very similar. You know, with excitement, we are not sure what's going to happen. We can either, with that uncertainty, go down the fear road, which is, oh my gosh, you know, I don't know, and so therefore I'm going to avoid it. Or we can say, I don't know what's going to happen, but it could be really good, and I'm just going to be open to the experience and maybe not have expectations. I wouldn't necessarily say, oh, it's going to be like this and it's going to be like that, because it really might not be. I would try to see. I don't know if this child has had an experience in the past where he was excited about something, and or maybe he was even afraid of something, but he tried it and he did like it. If that's a success that he had in the past, that would be really helpful to bring up at this point and help him recall that. And, you know, you remember when you felt this, but you did this, and here's how it turned out. That might be helpful. I would also say, instead of saying, well, why don't you want to go, or why are you changing your mind, instead just rephrase that in terms of, well, what's changed? Because I know you were really excited about this, and now I'm hearing that you don't want to go. What's changed? And maybe just ask it in that way so it's not doesn't come off as some kind of a judgment. You know, what's wrong with you? You know, why aren't you, you know, you don't want to come off like that. You want him to be able to share. And if through that sharing he says he really is afraid, you know, it's not just excitement, which I think you can channel in a positive direction, but he really is afraid, then maybe brainstorm how he can handle what he thinks might happen. You know, one of the things I'll often do with children is say, well, what's when they're going into a new situation is, well, what's the worst thing that could happen? And let them say, let their imagination run. What's the worst thing that could happen? Okay, so if that happened, what could you say? What could you do? What might the positive side of that be? Or what lesson might that have for you? Or what might you learn, you know, from that? So I think I would go ahead and entertain, if he really truly is scared, of what might happen, and then maybe help him come up with some ideas for doing that. The other thing that can be helpful in terms of not pushing is say, well, let's give it a try. I don't know whether or not, now if they've signed the child up for soccer for the entire season, I'm generally one that will say pretty much across the board, if you sign up for it, you got to complete it. But to say, well, let's just go and see what happens. Maybe agree to stay there the first time. He's four, you might always stay there for the first few practices. And then after the first couple practices especially, do some more processing of, well, what was that like, and what did you like best? And, you know, was there any part of that that you didn't like? And, well, what did you learn from that? So, again, stay away from the lectures, the preaching, you know, the, well, you know, everybody's afraid. And I know they're pearls of wisdom, and I know that we've all been there, but that's not necessarily going to help the child work through the feelings. Instead, ask questions, and a four-year-old is able to answer questions. So just ask questions that get the child to explore a little bit how he's feeling and that type of thing. So that's my suggestions to that parent. I don't see any callers. And Chris, do we have anyone in the chat room right now?
We have a couple of people in the chat room, but no questions right now. So
okay.
If you'd like to move on to one of those topics that you came prepared for,
sure.
Then I'd say go right ahead.
Okay, that sounds good. I got a question, and it says, I'm a single mom with very little income. We don't have TV, cable at least, and very little extras. I think my kids are okay with our, quote, lack of things right now, but as they get older, they're going to notice that we don't have as many extras as their friends. So how do I handle their disappointment, and should I be trying to add certain extras to my budget? And I think this question, which has come up often, but it's particularly come up in recent years with the really tough economic times, that I think all of us are really having to take a look at what our priorities are, and as adults, that's difficult enough for us to go without some of our toys and things and even essentials. You know, for some families are really struggling just to make ends meet with essentials. But for kids, it's much more difficult. I don't think they necessarily understand everything that you know, we're dealing with, and I don't know that lecturing about them or, you know, pulling out the checkbook is necessarily a helpful thing. I don't really think that the single mom's lack of money is the issue here. What I really think is that it's the children's values. And while right now, you know, it seems as though they're okay with that lack of things, I think she's right. Chances are, depending on where she lives, who their friends are, you know, they probably are going to notice. And that's an opportunity to have a discussion, again, not a lecture, but to have a discussion, a Q&A kind of thing, to help children take a look at what their priorities are. So, you know, she can ask her children when that time comes, or she can make some value statements even before that time comes. If they do notice, you know, of asking them, well, you know, which would they rather have, more things and less time together, if she were to get a second job just to buy things, well, then she's gone more. The kids will have to spend more time with the sitter. There's always a trade-off for that. And asking them maybe, what would those things give you? And when they really identify what is it that that would give you, then maybe identify, well, is there a way that you could get that without those things? If they really do start to ask for things that you can't afford, then that's where we can always ask, well, would you, if you'd like to save up your money, you could do that. How do you think you might be able to earn some extra money? And I do have an article on allowances on the website. And if people get the teleseminar album, the free extra bonus audio on there is an interview that I did on kids and money. And so that has some suggestions, you know, in terms of how to teach kids about money and earning and saving and all that kind of thing. My bottom line is that if they're going to get something new, that, and especially if you're on a tight budget, that you not agree to buy it all, that they at least pay for half, possibly all, that's your call, but at least have them learn how to save up and do something. I think in general that, you know, she says that her kids are okay right now with this. I think as kids get more out into society and see other kids, what they see is that American society in particular does tend to look outside of themselves. People in general do tend to look outside of themselves for what can make them happy, whether it is, you know, a romance or it's a game or it's a movie or food or whatever. We have a tendency in our society to look outside of ourselves for what makes us happy. And I think this is a real opportunity for us to help children learn that happiness really comes from within and that the most important things in life can't be bought. You know, family, friends, relationships. And those are things that, you know, younger kids aren't going to care a whole lot about. You know, they may care more for objects and things and toys. But we can help children develop those internal qualities, like being grateful for what they do have and helping them shift from what they can get to what they can give. And I think the two radio shows that we did in November and December were really good radio shows on that topic. In November, we talked about teaching children gratitude. And in December, this is the 2009, in 2009, December, we also talked about consumerism, and this was around the holiday season, around shopping and kids, you know, gimme, gimme, gimme. But we had a real discussion in there about helping children become givers and be involved in charity work and those kinds of things. And I think when we encourage children to be involved in those things and they're involved in activities that don't circulate and focus just on things, then it helps them develop those inner qualities, and it helps them really get their priorities straight. And it's not a lecture, it's not a pressure, it's something that just comes from within the children that then they are more interested in wanting to feel good. That's a feeling that never goes away. You know, toys and things and houses and clothes and all of those things, they all are temporary, they all can disappear. And the one thing that really sticks with us that no one can take away are those really good feelings from being helpful to others or giving to others. So I would say, you know, sounds like mom's got her priorities straight, and right now her kids are. So hopefully, as they have these discussions and these experiences, kids will very probably more than likely understand and agree with her values and her reasons for doing things that way. So that's what I suggest about that. Let's see. What else do I have? Actually, we are due for a station break, I do believe.
Yes,
so,
we are.
Yes. So let's see. Let me take just a few quick minutes, and let me welcome those of you who might have just joined the call or joined the show. This is Parents Tool Talk, and I'm your host, Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop. Tonight we are having an open question and answer session, and any question on any parenting skill or challenging situation the parents face is, you can call in with any of those. If you do have any questions during the live show today, you can either call 1-347-205-9654 and hit the 1 on your phone keypad to raise your hand, or you can send us a question using the chat room at parentstooltalk.com. The phone number again is 1-347-205-9654, and the chat room is at parentstooltalk.com, and you want to hit the play/chat button. And while you are doing that, if you're calling in or typing in a chat question, let me just mention that if you would like to get access to this month's bonus resources, then I encourage you to sign up for the Parents Tool Talk mailing list. You'll also receive links to our featured resources, both from Parents Tool Shop and from our guest experts on our Friday shows. You can get information about upcoming shows, tips on how to download the Parents Tool Talk recordings to your computer, how to subscribe to an RSS feed, and more. It's really the only way to get exclusive information about future radio shows and access to the bonus resources and discounts that we only offer to our loyal listeners. So if you want to sign up for that mailing list, just go to www.parentstooltalk.com/links. That's www.parentstooltalk.com/links, L-I-N-K-S. And just know that I will never share your private information with anyone for any reason. It does put you on the main Parents Tool Shop list, and then the radio show list is a sublist of our main database. So now I'd actually like, Chris, if you could break in for a minute and tell listeners about the resource that I've been referencing tonight, where they can find pretty much all of the information on some of the different skills that I'm mentioning and some of the processes, which is the Parents Tool Shop book. Would you do that for me?
Sure, I can sure do that. And just a quick note to our listeners, too. Jody mentioned her article on allowances and our two radio shows, November and December of 2009. Just want to let everybody know who's on our mailing list that I will go ahead and put that on the post-show resources email that comes out the day following the show, so that'll be Wednesday. And for those of us who are not on our list, just want to let you know that you can download any of our past shows at Blog Talk. There are actually two different addresses you can type in. The easier one is www.parentstooltalk.com, and from there you can download the November and December, not to mention all of our other radio shows. And to get the article on allowances, you can go to the website in the freebies section and then look under articles. But again, to those of us who are on our mailing list, those links will be coming straight to your mailbox. So now to talk real quickly about the Parents Tool Shop book. This book was born out of Jody's years of teaching effective skills to parents in parenting classes, and it's the basis for every principal taught in every Parents Tool Shop class and at the Parents Tool Shop website. The book, The Parents Tool Shop, organizes the most effective practical parenting tools into a unique blueprint called the Universal Blueprint for Parenting Success. You can also think of this as a formula that helps you find solutions to all your parenting challenges, and these solutions are personalized. So gone is the inaccurate, unhelpful, and confusing advice that deters your progress as a parent, replaced by a universal blueprint for parenting that is, again, customizable, universal, and effective. The Parents Tool Shop book will give you this system for parenting every child from ages 1 to 18, and it even shows you how to apply those skills to your adult relationships. And we hope that you choose to make the Parents Tool Shop book a part of your library. For more information, go to parentstoolshop.com and click on the picture of the book that is right there on the homepage. So now I'll hand things back over to you, Jody.
All right. Thanks, Chris. All right, well, let's get back to these questions. And, Chris, you can, in between questions, let me know if anyone's in the chat room or on the switchboard that does have a question. You are welcome to call in anytime. So let's go to the next question. All right, this next question says, my sons are very well behaved, and she doesn't tell me their ages. My sons are very well behaved, but when I pick them up from their dad's place after a weekend visit, they are obnoxious and unruly, and they act out towards each other and call each other names. So first of all, this is actually a very common problem, not only among divorced parents, but I know we have a lot of foster parents who have attended Parents Tool Shop classes, and this is something that we often talk about, are transitions after visitation. I'll address my answer more specifically around the divorce issue, since that's what the question asked, but I think some of the suggestions can easily be adapted for foster parents. There's really about four possible reasons for this, and I'll say what they all are so that, if other people are listening, one of these others might fit them. But I think you'll see we can figure out what the issue is for her. The first reason that you may have these transition issues is that children are upset about the divorce or the separation, in the case of foster parents, and they're acting out because it's really difficult to go back and forth and back and forth. And just when children have a difficult time expressing those emotions verbally, and it is very difficult for them to really identify that and talk about it, it will tend to come out through their behavior. However, usually you would see that behavior in both homes. And she's saying that her kids are well behaved with her. So I don't know that it's just that they're upset about the divorce and having a hard time with separation. The second reason is that they're doing it on purpose for power because they want to do what they want to do. And again, since she's saying that they're well behaved for her, I'm actually going to look at the next reason. The third reason is that if her ex-spouse is saying anything about her that's negative or disrespectful, then the boys are going to be more likely to treat her disrespectfully. They may say things that normally they wouldn't say. It almost sounds as though they're repeating something that they heard. And again, usually, you know, if that's the case, she would be seeing that disrespectful behavior almost all the time. And she's saying they're well behaved with her. So I don't think that's it for her situation. The fourth one, and this is the one I think it is, is I think it's a sign that the ex-spouse's parenting style is very different from hers. And my guess is that it's probably more on the permissive side, because the children are coming home and they're kind of wild and out of control and they haven't been disciplined and who knows, maybe they've been having a lot of sugar or staying up late or whatever. And so it's really difficult. It's like they're horses who have been allowed to run wild and free, and it's difficult to get the reins back on them again. And I would say because the fact that they behave well for her, and then when they come home, it's this transition between these two very different environments, I think, is what's really difficult for them. So unfortunately, she's not probably going to be able to change her ex-spouse. Although the ideal would be that they would talk, they would have some agreements for what the rules would be, they'd have some consistency between their homes. That would obviously be the ideal. But I don't know that that's going to happen. So let's assume that's not an option. Then what's left for mom to do is when kids come home, just acknowledge to them that you know it's really difficult having the two different sets of rules. Acknowledge, if the father is permissive, acknowledge to the kids that you understand that they probably like having fewer rules and more freedom at their father's house. And you can tell them that you can either tell them or preferably ask them. I'll say it and then I'll give away of asking as a question. You can tell them, you know, that the reason you have more rules is that you believe in the long run that they'll have a harder time in life if they don't know how to operate with rules. Now, a better way is to ask a question. Why do you think I have rules? Why do you think school has rules? Why do you think we do this different, or why do you think we do that different? And allow the children to kind of look within themselves and find that answer within themselves so that it's not just a lecture. It's not, you know, oh, you know, you have to behave and that kind of thing. I would encourage her to take some time during the week, not when the kids have first come home, but before their next visit, sometime when things are quiet, things are going pretty good, to sit down and, whether it's a problem-solving session or a family council kind of a discussion, to sit down with them and to brainstorm some ways that they can make the transition easier. She can't necessarily change what's happening over there, and she needs for things to transition and kind of get back into the groove with how things are there. So they can brainstorm ways for how they might be able to make that transition a little bit easier for the kids. And it's up to them to come up with the ideas, and ideally, if kids can come up with the ideas, it's even better. Just a couple of ideas that, I mean, I'll toss out is sometimes if you can do things within the first 15 minutes, that first 15 minutes is transition activities. Whether or not that's spending time together, just listening to what they did, what their experience was, no judgment, no criticism of what the other parent did, just listen and, oh, tell me about your day, you know, tell me what you did, that kind of thing. Anything that happens over in the ex-spouse's house is between the kids and the ex-spouse. unless it's like endangering them and it's an abuse situation, and that's a different story. But for, you know, if they're complaining about something or even comparing, you know, well, we got to do this and you didn't, you know, you never let us do that. No criticism, no lectures, just acknowledging and listening. Another thing that you can do, and this is not necessarily an addition, you could do this instead of, because that's a more sit-down activity. You could do something more active. If they're wild, they're kind of out of control, of doing something where maybe going to the park and initially they can run or swing, but then you take a walk and you start to transition into that talking and then getting into the car. I think it's really difficult when kids have been really wound up. You put them in a car, you drive them home, and then right away they've got to go do their homework, or they've got to sit down and have dinner, or something that is jumping right into their that custodial parent's home environment. So take a look at that transition time and get the kids' input, if possible, on what would be helpful for that. The other thing I would suggest, and I don't know this parent's parenting style. I haven't actually been there watching. But I would just encourage her to look at her parenting style to see whether or not it may be starting to head into the over-controlling side. It's really common for parents to overcompensate. So if you know that one spouse is too permissive, then the other spouse will tend to get more controlling because they're trying to compensate for how permissive that gets. And the myth or the illusion is that somehow that's going to balance things out, and it doesn't. The parents just get farther and farther apart. The kids, there's more inconsistency. The kids get more confused, and it's a lot more easy for them to manipulate the parents. So she wants to take a look at whether or not she's really in the balance zone, which may still be more firm than what her ex-spouse is doing. I would encourage her to involve her children in making the rules and what the consequences would be and some of the routines and who's going to do this and things like chores. Do that within the context of family counsel, problem solving, getting their involvement. Because if they get involved and are part of coming up with those decisions, then they're going to be more self-regulated and self-disciplined. What she wants to avoid is when they come home and they're wild and out of control, then she has to go into the more controlling approach than she normally would, which then sets her up as the bad guy, and you're too strict, and look at how different this is from, you know, why can't you just be more relaxed and laid back? And so if she can involve them in that and try to stay within the balance zone, involve children in the decisions and coming up with maybe a plan for transition, I think that would be helpful. The other thing I would suggest to her is, if there is a way to get more teamwork, or if she needs to deal with an inconsistent parenting partner, there are a couple of resources that I'd just like to encourage her to check out. In Chapter 2 of the Parents Tool Shop, there's a section on building parenting teamwork. In Chapter 15, there's a section on dealing with inconsistent parenting partners. I believe that there are also excerpts, articles on the website that are free, that take some of that information and put it in a free article form. And so you can look for those in the article section of the website. So that's really what I would suggest, and some information for where she can get more information on that, so that hopefully the transitions can go a little bit smoother. So that's my answer to that one.
You want to take another station break, Judy?
Sure. Yep, we're getting close to the 40-minute mark, so that would be good. Let's see where I am. Can you do that station break?
Sure. I'd be happy to. Let's see. So for those of you who have just joined us, this is Parents Tool Talk with your host, Jody Johnston Powell of the Parents Tool Shop. Tonight we are having an open question and answer session, the third of three. Any question that you have on any parenting skill or challenging situations that parents face, any question is welcome. So if you have any questions during the live show, you can either call in at area code 347-205-9654 or send us a question using the chat room at www.parentstooltalk.com. And when you go to that page, click on today's show title, which is Ask Jody Anything, the Parenting Advice Hour number 3. For those of you who may be calling in, when you do call in at 347-205-9654, hit the number 1 on your phone keypad to raise your hand, or send us a question using the chat room, again, at www.parentstooltalk.com. So now let's take a look at another resource that Jody has already mentioned. She mentioned our teleseminar collection, and she mentioned the bonus CD on kids and money. Let me tell you a little bit more about that collection. This is called the Parents Tool Shop Teleseminar Series Collection, and it takes the proven effective universal blueprint and applies it to the most common challenges that parents face. These teleseminars were recorded live with Jody and a group of parents and family professionals from around the world. Each enhanced audio CD, and there are 12 total, includes the full teleseminar recording, a complete transcript, and all the resources available to the original teleseminar participants. And as far as the topics covered, in addition to topics like holiday parenting issues and dealing with difficult people, this collection offers in-depth training and how to handle situations like sibling rivalry, temper tantrums, bedtime hassles, morning delays, picky eaters, teaching tidiness, teaching truthfulness, and more. And each collection includes that 13th bonus CD featuring a rare interview with Jody and a discussion on the subject of kids and money. And we're very excited about this new resource package, and we hope you'll take the time to check it out. We do have 5-minute samples from each teleseminar of these 12 on the Parents Tool Shop website. So that's an hour of content from this collection that you can sample for free. So to find out more about this, go to parentstoolshop.com, scroll down to the bottom of the home page, and click on the picture of the teleseminar series collection. That will take you to more information, including those free audio samples. And just one more mention we'd like to make, that this is our last planned question and answer program, and we want to hear what you think of what we've been doing and whether it's been of value to you and what kind of programming you would like us to provide. So we've created a brief 5-question survey. Like Jody said, it should take 1 minute, maybe 3 minutes at most to complete, and you will receive a free gift as a thank you at the end. And you can access that survey at www.parentstooltalk.com/links. That's www.parentstooltalk.com/links. And now, Jody, I think I'll hand things back over to you if you have another question you'd like to answer.
Okay, that sounds good. Yes, I do have some more that people have asked. I've had a whole collection of questions that people have asked and that I've answered. And so another one that is very common is, let me just read the question as it was asked, but I think the details don't have to be specific to this parent. I think a lot of parents can relate to this. She says, my 8-year-old is afraid to go upstairs by himself. When he says he has to go up by himself, he runs down the hallway so fast and down the stairs even faster. So fast that I'm afraid he's going to hurt himself. He also doesn't want to sleep by himself in his room because of this fear. And in the Parents Tool Shop book, in Chapter 7, here's the secret gem within the Parents Tool Shop book are actually the answer key to the practice exercises. Every chapter goes through and teaches the techniques. I give an example for TOS tweens and teens for almost every technique, dialogues, stories to apply that. But then at the end, there's practice exercises. And if somebody skips over those, first of all, they're not getting the practice that would really help them master the skills. But the answer key was my way of being able to get to these kinds of questions, because to address a situation and solve a problem, you need to use a variety of tools, not just one tool from one tool set. And so that's the benefit of the teleseminar series, is that we can take a look at situations and then you can really see how the system works and what type of problem it is and that type of thing. In the Chapter 7 and 8 practice exercises, there is one in there on a child who's afraid of a monster being under their bed. A younger child than what this mom is saying, but there's a whole section in there on fears. I also think that there is an article on the website on fears, so that may be helpful for people to check out. Generally, here's the thing about fears. Fears are a result of the child's imagination, and because they're creating the fears in their minds, our response needs to use their imaginations, but use it to empower them, because right now they're using their imaginations to disempower themselves. They're giving power to the fear, and we want to help them to use that imagination to give power to themselves. So we want to, in our response, help children develop skills for how to prevent or manage their fears. So on the first hand, one of the things we want to do is just help them realize, you know, fears are caused by our thoughts. And a lot of times children don't really know how to be aware of those thoughts and change them. And that's exactly what we need to do to be able to succeed in getting rid of our fears, particularly those that we're just making up. It's not like a snake fell on my lap and now I'm scared of snakes. Not that kind. We're talking about the kind that nothing really did happen. It's all kind of in their imagination. What most parents will tend to do is they will tend to rescue the child from their fears. They become the hero that kind of swoops in, you know, with this imaginary cape on their back and comes up with some magical solution that saves the child from being afraid. Or they, on the other hand, the other extreme is they tell them it's all in their imagination and quit being afraid and there's no such thing and what's the matter with you, and it's, you know, more of a negative, harsh. When parents play the heroes, children might feel better. And this may be one of those of you who have taken my class know that I often write it big up on the board. Just because it works, it doesn't mean you should use it. This is one of those times, yes, when we swoop in and we have our magic spray and our this and that, and we go around and we show them that everything's okay. Yes, it helps them feel better, but it didn't teach them anything about preventing or resolving or facing or overcoming their own fears. All that did was show them that they really can't handle it, that they need us to handle it, and now they're just more dependent on us. So what we really want to do is you want to make kids their heroes, their own heroes in this imaginary story that they are telling themselves. They can save themselves from their own fears. So here are the suggestions that I give parents, and you can generalize these to any fears, and I'll kind of talk about these couple, you know, the monsters and the there's something scary up and down the stairs. And I can so relate to this because I actually had a lot of fears. I was scared of the dark. I was afraid to sleep alone. But I was really afraid to go down into our basement. And it wasn't one of those creepy dirt floor basements, you know, like the really old houses. Like, I won't even go down in those now. But, I mean, this was like a finished basement. But in our neighborhood, a crime had taken place. And, of course, you know, I overheard all the adults talking about it. And they had run behind where our house was. And so I kept imagining, you know, that this criminal was hiding out in my basement. And boy, talk about fear. And if I had to go downstairs for anything, there was a light on the stairs, but you had to walk halfway through the downstairs and reach across an open door to turn on the next light switch. Oh, my gosh. The fear that went through me and being afraid somebody was going to reach out and grab my hand. And I can remember racing up those steps so hard. And I think a couple times I probably tripped on my nightgown or whatever. So I really can relate to this. I don't want anyone to think I'm, you know, like, oh, you know, fears are nothing. I lived most of my life through fear, so I really can relate to this. And this is why I feel so passionately about making kids the heroes and empowering them when it comes to their fears. First of all, acknowledge what the child believes. Don't acknowledge that it's true. Acknowledge that that's what they are thinking at the time. So rather than saying, oh, I bet it's scary when that monster comes out, which would be actually agreeing that there really is such a thing as a monster, or saying, oh, don't be afraid, there's no such thing as monsters, which is denying it, as saying, I bet it's really scary to think that there is a monster. So that we're using that language that gets them, we're not agreeing, we're not denying, but we're saying, we're acknowledging feelings and saying, wow, you know, that really must be scary if you were thinking that. Encourage children to share their thoughts. Ask them, when this happens, what are you thinking? And I don't mean, what were you thinking? I don't mean that. I mean, what are you thinking when that happens? What are you telling yourself? What's your dialogue? What are you? And kids are going to be probably embarrassed to tell you that. But this is why you need to make it a safe environment for them to share. And you just want to hear the conversation that they're holding in their head. Don't criticize it. Don't deny it. You know, what they're telling themselves. Just accept right now that's what is happening. And then ask them, well, what would make you feel better? What could you tell yourself that would make you feel better? What would make you feel safe? What would make you feel comfortable? And then help them develop a conversation that they can say, a new dialogue that they can say to themselves, so that they're aware of their thoughts, they learn to choose their thoughts, as opposed to just running, letting, you know, their imagination run rampant and control them, their mind and their thoughts are for them to learn to control. And the more they learn to do that, the less stress they're going to have in their lives and the more empowered and control they're going to have in their lives. So help them plan a new dialogue for what they can say to themselves. A very quick example of this is my daughter, when she was very little, was scared of kids in costumes on Halloween. And so as we were walking around the neighborhood, if she would see somebody, it was one of her first times that we went trick-or-treating, and when she would see somebody in a mask, she would get very afraid. So we made up a song. And the song was about, you know, we're out here and there's just people. These are just people. They're just dressed up. Look how silly they look. Look, you know. And we made it into a song. And we would sing it together. And then I noticed that she would sing it to herself. And so something like that, where it's a conversation, it's something they can tell themselves other than what they're afraid of. Also encourage them to take control of the situation in a really tangible way. And here's a couple of examples that I've shared with parents over the years for some of these. If there's a monster under their bed, tell them it's their room. People are only allowed in their room if they give them permission. So the monster has to have their permission to stay. And if they don't want them to stay, they can tell them to get out. And so you practice with the child how to say, get out of my room. And the child would say, get out of my room. That wouldn't scare a monster. Say it in a way that would scare a monster. You know, and really encourage them to be assertive, you know, not aggressive, but in an assertive, forceful voice. You know, that they take control. This is their room. This is their space. And just as you would teach them to say no to a stranger, you know, no, get out of my room. And that's what they can tell the monster. Another idea, and this really utilizes the power of the mind, and this may sound hokey to people, but it really works, especially with kids whose imaginations are so real to them, is they can point to the monster. When they point to the monster's head, you tell them that they can control the size of the monster. So they point to the top of the monster's head, and as they move their finger down, the monster will get smaller and smaller and smaller. And they can do that until the monster is so small that they can either stamp it out or kick it like a ball or blow it away like a piece of dust. And the third one, and this was your child thinks someone's chasing him or lurking in the dark upstairs, and this is what I did when I was scared of that, was to practice how he can confidently walk upstairs, what he can say out loud, to prevent anything from jumping out at him, what he can say to himself. And don't let kids worry about being silly. Don't you make them feel silly for doing this. It's temporary. It will help them get over it. They'll be much more powerful. I can remember when I was first living on my own in an apartment, and there would be times I'd come home to a dark apartment, and I'd be really creeped out. And I can remember flipping on the lights and, you know, opening the door and, you know, kind of scaring anything that might be in there. It helps you feel more in control of the situation. And over time, when we have enough successes with feeling successful over our fears, then fears don't get a hold of us quite as easily, and we start to become the masters rather than our fears being the masters. So get kids ideas, you know, for what they could say or what they could do to feel in control. The last thing that I would like to share with people is a really phenomenal technique that does wonders with fears and phobias and a whole host of other things. It's a technique I teach in the Inner Secrets to a Stress-Free class, which is one of the teleclasses I'm considering offering this summer, in addition to the TIPS teleclass. So that's on the survey. I'd like for people to find out if they're interested in that. The technique is called the Emotional Freedom Technique, and it really gets amazing results, particularly with fears and phobias. It's a technique that once you learn it, it only takes 1 minute. It's a tapping technique. And if you want to learn it, just to learn the EFT technique, Emotional Freedom Technique, go to emofree.com. That's www.emofree.com. www.emofree.com. And click on the words Learn EFT, and you can get a free starter kit. The manual is free. It explains the science behind it, how it works, how to do it, everything. Then read the forum. There are tons of stories in there from people who have used this technique on countless kinds of issues, from physical issues to emotional issues. And look for stories in there about fears, With children, this will work with children who are afraid of are having nightmares, that are afraid of lightning, that are afraid of fireworks. I've shared this with so many people, and every single time it's really worked. For you can teach kids how to do it, and instead of tapping on meridian points, which is like acupuncture points, they can learn to tap on their happy points, on their happy spots. And so it's different meridian points that they can do. So there's lots of stories there who have taught their children the technique. And it really almost, I mean, it can oftentimes be an instant, almost miraculous technique that can stop a wide variety of fears and emotional issues. So that's my somewhat longer answer on what to do about fears. Oh, goodness, and I see that we are down to the last 5 minutes.
We should have time for one more question if you want to squeeze
that
in. Yeah,
and I'll tell you what, I'm not going to do a longer one. Let me do some of the quickies that I have. Let's see. This week I had somebody come up to me and said, what do I do? My kid has a potty mouth, which means it's poopy this and poo-poo that, and not necessarily cuss words, but poopy mouth kinds of things. And she said, I've tried taking away his Nintendo. I've tried restricting him. I've tried sending him to bed. I tried everything, and nothing's working. And my answer to that is, if it's a potty mouth, then send them to the bathroom and say, that's if you're going to talk potty stuff, that's where we talk about potty stuff. So you can go up in the bathroom. You can say as much as you want. Just close the door in the bathroom, and you can say all that you want. When you're done, come on back, because we don't use that kind of language out here. And so far, most of the parents who have reported back, has said that that's worked. So try that. Tattling, this is a really quickie one. This is also in the book. There's a special section in there, Chapter 8, just on tattling. In a nutshell, in 1 minute or less, teach kids the difference between telling and tattling. Telling is telling a parent or an adult when there is a dangerous situation that they need to know about and intervene in. Tattling is telling just to get another kid in trouble. Teach kids the difference. When they bring an issue to you, ask them, are you telling or are you tattling? If they're telling, then you need to go check out the situation. And you can teach them what an emergency is, blood, things like that. Those qualify as emergencies. If they're tattling, they've got two options. Either they can handle it on their own, and you can brainstorm with them. I can hear you don't like that. What do you think you could do? Put the ball back in their court so that they're handling it on their own, or do some problem solving and find out what are some of their options that they could do to handle that situation. So that's a quickie one. And lying and back talk, actually, I had those questions. Those are real common. We've got a teleseminar on those, and I would honestly just recommend it. It was the best answers on those for lying and back talk, so I would go with those. Check out the teleseminar for those. Okay, well, we are down to 2 minutes, and so I think it's time to do a quick recap. This has been Parents Tool Talk. I'm Jody Johnston-Powell, and we are wrapping up our last open question and answer test program here on Parents Tool Talk. I really, Chris and I both, my producer, we would really like to know what you've thought about this series, whether or not you're interested in more live Q&A calls. If so, what would those be like? When might they be? And I also would like to know if you are interested in summer teleclasses. Usually people are not able to come to my workshops unless they're local. So I'd like to know that. So if you would, just take 1 to 3 minutes to fill out our survey. Just go to parentstooltalk.com/links, and you can get a free gift. And our next program will be on Friday, April the 9th, and we will be discussing emotional abuse with my special guest, Sarah Kay Smullins. So if you want news about future shows delivered right to your email, then go to www.parentstooltalk.com/links and sign up for the Parents Tool Talk mailing list. So I hope that you enjoyed the show today. Please spread the word. Send more people to listen. And if you did like that, let us know. You can send your comments and feedback and questions if you'd like for us to answer them on future shows. You can send those to questions@parentstooltalk.com. So if you would, please join me. I hope that we will do another Q&A show. Let me know if you would like that. And then join us either live or by email with your questions in advance. That email address, once again, is questions@parentstooltalk.com. And I'm Jody Johnston-Powell with parentstoolshop.com. Tons of free resources at the website. Please go and check it out. On behalf of myself, my producer Chris, and all of us here in the Parents Tool Shop team, I want to thank you for joining us today, and I look forward to talking to you next time. Take care.